session number 24197, Rule 7.
This is the fourth reel of a taped interview with Ron Allen in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 14th of the 10th, 2002, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Ron, we've been talking about the situation in the Lebanon, but I did want to come back a little way in relation to December 7th, 1941. As I understand, you're still in Palestine at this point. This is a significant point in relation to the Japanese now being involved in the war. What did you hear about that situation at the time, and how did that affect the situation for you and how you saw it?
Well, I think we realised that things could be a bit different now with the Japanese coming in, because Australia could be threatened, and we were hoping that that wouldn't be long before we'd return to Australia. Around about that time, or a bit later, the 6th Division went home, and then I think they were followed by the 7th Division. Might be the other way around, but the Australia was withdrawing their troops from the Middle East because of the threat to Australia posed by the Japanese.
On December the 11th, Germany and Italy had declared war on the United States of America. How was that seen then?
That was seen, I think, as a balancing situation, with the help of America in the Pacific. I felt, anyhow, that there would be a good chance that the Japanese could be defeated.
How had the Japanese been seen up until this point?
Well, I don't think we had expected that they would join the Axis. It was hard for us to know. All we went on, really, was the BBC News from London. We used to get that each midday, I think it was. So we were following that fairly closely to see what's going on.
In relation to the position, obviously, the significance of the Japanese entering in relation to Australia, had you heard about the fall of Singapore in February 15th of 42?
Yes, we heard of that over the news, of course, and rather staggered when we heard that a number of the British battleships had been sunk, because I think we realised then that the Japanese were more powerful than perhaps we'd thought in the first place.
In relation to, again, the threat to Australia, had you heard about the bombing of Darwin, for instance, 19th of February?
I think we did hear of that through the news, that's all. We didn't have any official advice on that. We were hoping that we would be returned to Australia fairly quickly, but when we went to Lebanon, of course, we were a bit worried that we were perhaps going to stay in the Middle East.
You mean mentioning, as I was saying earlier, the Lebanon situation. What then were your duties in the Lebanon to be?
Well, we understood that we were there to counter any possible attack coming down from the north or from through Turkey. Although Turkey was neutral, or they were on our side, if anything. And we spent most of our time in Lebanon digging trenches and getting ready for a defence of the country there.
What sorts of news had you been able to get from Australia, from your people, during this period?
We were getting news of what they were doing, especially in regard to possible air attack and that sort of thing. I remember my family were digging a big trench, or I don't know what you'd call it.
People talk of slit trenches and bunkers being built.
Bunkers, and they were digging this, and I wrote back and said, don't get it too close to the... We had 4,000 gallons of water up on stands there, and they were building it towards the back of the... towards that. And I said, it wouldn't be any good if that got blown down and you got full of water.
This is back here in Perth that people are now digging trenches. This must have been quite a concern for you. The war was actually quite close.
Yes, it was a concern to us. But we just seemed to be sitting there and digging trenches and fortifications in Lebanon.
How did news like the digging of trenches, the preparation against attack in Perth, affect morale, do you think, of the men stuck up in the Lebanon?
Well, we'd had quite a few advices over the previous months as to how the war was going, especially when the Japanese came in, and I think the troops generally were quite concerned, and they were all hoping that we'd be very soon going back to Australia, as the other divisions had.
Well, you were mentioning to me off air that you actually didn't stay very long in Lebanon. You came back for officer training. How did that come about?
Well, I think it was in Tobruk that I was interviewed for the possibility of going to the Middle East OCTU. So it was just a matter, I suppose, when there was room available at the OCTU, that they arranged for some of the Australians to go.
Had you had ambitions to be an officer in the army?
Not really. I didn't think I'd reach that stage, but I was quite happy to try. I think I probably had the sufficient education to do the job, and I had the experience then.
What sorts of qualifications, or what sorts of qualities do you think people were looking for in future officers at that time?
Well, they must have been looking towards people that could lead men and had some experience that way, because in most of the time in Tobruk I had been acting as a platoon commander, which is really an officer's position. But I didn't think very much about that. I just knew that there was a chance that I would go. And after we'd been in Lebanon perhaps for a couple of months, I was advised that with another member of our battalion. We were going down to Cairo to the Middle East OCCHU. So off we went.
What was the situation then on arrival? Tell us about the Cairo in March of 42.
Well, I don't think there was any concern there. In the OCCHU itself, the commander and the people who are running the place. And I think once they withdrew to Alamein and the Germans had come down towards Alexandria, people were rather concerned then. And it wasn't long after that we were advised that the OCCHU itself would be moved to Palestine.
Can we talk a little bit about the OCCHU, the situation in Cairo for you, what that involved?
Well, we were spending a lot of time drilling and taking squads of men for instruction and map reading and doing a few exercises where we'd go out into the desert and use the maps to work from one place to another and return again. There was quite a number of lectures on different aspects of mainly infantry work, but we were also advised about the use of artillery and other weapons, machine gun battalions, and also how the Air Force could assist. However, we had not... In all the time we'd been in action in Tobruk, we didn't have any support from the Air Force. Mainly it was the enemy Air Force bombing us, and the town of Tobruk itself.
What sorts of insights were you given, do you think, in relation to the running of warfare?
Mainly the insight of proper leadership, keeping troops well informed as to what was happening and what they should do. I think that's been very, very important, because the Australian troops anyhow, unless they are kept informed, they do nothing but grizzle. And they blame the officers for doing something that they don't expect. But I think it's very important to keep everybody informed in your command. That's the most important thing as to what's happening, so that they are mentally prepared for any action that might come along.
How did you see the success of your time in the training? Were you doing well?
I think I was doing quite well with most aspects. I was criticised at one stage for my writing, because every now and again they'd inspect your notebooks to see what you've been, whether you're getting the correct information or not, I suppose. But they found it rather difficult to read my writing, apparently.
How was your confidence being built, do you think?
Well, I think I was becoming more confident to carry out the duties that I'd be inspected by an infantry lieutenant or a platoon commander.
How are you seeing those men of higher rank? Did you change, for instance, your attitude towards them, given the fact that you are now being trained to be an officer yourself?
No, because I think at all times I've had respect for the people in charge. If you haven't got respect for people in charge, you're not a very happy soldier.
Did it give you an idea of an insight into the difficulties of their job, for instance?
Well, I'd already experienced the difficulties in Tobruk, which the right food was one of the main problems. I had risked my life at one stage to go down to company headquarters to see if they can improve the food.
Tell us about that.
I was just... we were under observation, obviously, because they could see me as movement there, and they decided to lob a few shells over. I quite expected them in here, but it didn't matter. I just went to ground and waited for them to finish.
In relation to the general situation, you've been mentioning a little later on the threat of Rommel. But what was the feeling in June when Tobruk had been heard to have fallen?
Well, then I was at the Okju, of course, so I don't know what the feeling was in the battalion, except that some of them have talked about it. At that stage, I think they were moved further north towards the border of Turkey. But it wasn't very long before they were brought back down through Egypt. They were all hoping to be put on the ship to go home, but they finished up going to Alexandria and then up to El Alamein. They weren't exactly laughing about that.
In relation to the significance of Tobruk and the importance that it held in people calling the thorn in the side of Rommel's advance, how then was it seen in relation to the situation on its fall?
Well, I think it was discussed at the Octu not only the participants in the Octu, but the lecturers also, and the general opinion was that the fall of Tobruk would make it possible for Rommel to launch a bigger attack on Egypt, because they'd get these supplies a lot quicker through Tobruk.
In relation to your situation, officers training, how was the mood then in relation to the significance of this event to change?
Well, actually, we expected to be a force that would be used. The actual Okju were expecting to be used by with their lecturers in charge against any possible invasion as far as Cairo was concerned. But the next thing we knew, we were told we were being transferred to Palestine.
I wanted to discuss, obviously, the situation in relation to Rommel's threat becoming greater. And obviously you mentioned the 2nd 28th coming back and being moved up the coast again.
Mm.
There's discussion of the various contacts with the enemy during early July of 42 in relation to successes at Ruiz, at Ridge on the 8th and 9th, and the sort of backwards and forwards success from the Allies to the Axis and back again in other ridges like the Machad and the Matiyaria, I think it's pronounced Ridge. Yeah. But then the situation in relation to Ruin Ridge altering things, the 27th. What was the feeling then to hear of the fall at Ruin Ridge?
Well, we found it very hard to understand, but it was explained later on that the battalion actually took their objective of Ruin Ridge, and the other units on their right and left actually didn't make it, got too hot for them, and that left the battalion on the ridge and on their objective, ready to defend it, out on their own. So it wasn't long before the tanks surrounded them, and when the officer in charge, the CO in charge, MacArthur, I think his name was, saw one or two of the boys killed, he decided the best thing to do would be to surrender the battalion. Otherwise, he was going to have them slaughtered. We had no tank. They had no tanks, and there was only infantry, and they only had the infantry weapons to deal with tanks, which is pretty well impossible, of course.
In relation to, obviously, the fall of the 2nd 28th, you would have had friends in that battalion.
Certainly. Yeah.
What were the feelings then in relation to what might have happened to them?
Well, we understood that they had been surrounded and had to surrender. Of course, they, what we called in the bag, they were then in the bag and had to be transferred back to Italy and Germany.
Were there any concerns in relation to the way in which German treatment of POWs might be meted out?
No. No, I think generally it was felt that the Germans were far superior to the Italians in treatment of prisoners. That was the general opinion right throughout, I think.
Obviously, then the reorganisation, the rebuilding of the 2nd 28th was to take place. Were you involved in that at all?
No, because I was still at the OCTU when the battalion was reformed. Of course, every time a battalion goes into battle, there is a certain percentage in called left out of battle, LOB, left out of battle, so that if they are knocked around, at least they've got a nucleus to reform again. And there was a left out of battle group, and on appeal, apparently, of a lot of throughout the 9th Division, a lot of other troops were quite happy to come and join the 2nd 28th. for one reason or another. One might be that they had a friend in the 28th, or they had some contact, or they were West Australians. But it wasn't long before they were built up to a fighting strength again.
In relation to the situation and obviously the loss of the battalion, the confidence in command, how did that change, do you think, around about this time?
I should say it didn't change at all, because it wasn't the CO's fault that he had to surrender the whole lot or be slaughtered, because he had led the troops and actually took the Ruin Ridge, which was their objective. It was the other supporting troops that didn't get up there. One lot of supporting troops were tanks. They didn't even make it. I'm not sure what the others are. I think it was an English battalion on the left, but I'm not sure of that.
In August of 42, there were changes to higher command, obviously. Auchinleck was replaced as Commander-in-Chief of the Middle East by General Harold Alexander. Had you heard anything about Alexander and Auchinleck at all?
No. Oh, well, we had heard about Auchinleck, but...
How had he been seen generally?
I think he had done a very good job against pretty difficult situations. And what was the other one?
Alexander. Have you heard anything about Alexander?
We had. I think he had been mentioned before. We certainly knew about him when he took over. But then before the main battle at Alamein, Montgomery was apparently sent out to take over the whole action. Well, he must have had a bit of a reputation.
Given command of the 8th Army. Mm. In relation to Montgomery, what had you heard about him?
We heard that he was very much on the ball, and he was very strict in making sure these troops did the job, but that's about all I'd heard anyhow. But I know that he I think it was about September when he took over, he sent round a instruction to which was read out to all troops as to what he expected them to do.
Can you recall anything of that instruction?
No, I can't really, because I don't think I was there then.
How did the fact that he was handing out instructions to the whole troop make him seen, do you think, amongst
the allies? I think they thought he was, here's a bloke that's on the ball, he's going to... He should make a difference, and obviously he was getting ready to attack the Germans.
In relation to his situation, I understand the plan of operation was Montgomery's first task was to thwart what proved to be Rommel's last great drive to capture the Nile Delta. And on the 30th of August to the 5th of September, Alamel Halfa Ridge was a place where a lot of that fighting went on. Did you hear anything about those actions at all?
Yes, I think our battalion was involved in some of that, and they performed fairly well. But not being there, I couldn't say exactly what happened.